All right, ladies and gentlemen, Zach Harold here with Archery Maniacs, and I just wanted to apologize for the poor sound quality from episode 2. That is clearly my fault. So what I have done is I have revised it and upped the volume throughout the episode so that hopefully you can hear my guest Sarah Hamilton much easier and much more clearly. So please, from now on, download the revised episode 2, because I will not be deleting the episode, right, the first episode 2. So please go ahead and download the revised episode 2. Thanks for all the great feedback. And of course, I want to give you, my audience, what it is that you want. So I hope that you can hear this one a lot better.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And now, a brief word from our sponsors. Do you want to turn that trophy hunting photo into a vinyl decal? Head on over to www.mytrophyvinyl.com and turn your memory into a vinyl decal that lasts. Do you need your bow tuned up? Alan at Sand Springs Archery has you covered. 970-756-9315.
Hey, it's time for your free gift.
That's right, he said free. Are you about to head on the hunt of a lifetime, but have no idea what you need in your pack? Well, Backpacker's Paradise has you covered. The 58-point gear list and the 4 to 12-day extended hunt nutrition list that successful hardcore hunters use so you too can kill the trophy of a lifetime. Pick up your free list at www.archerymaniacs.com. And change the outcome of your next hunt.
Now.
Let's.
Get.
Into.
The show!
Here we are in episode 2 with Sarah Hamilton. Sarah has been hunting since the age of 8 and actually grew up in the great state of Oklahoma. She currently resides in Texas and is on her way through med school. Sarah is a shooter for Matthews and also on the pro staff of Gator Waders. In this episode, Sarah and I are going to cover becoming a pro staff shooter for Matthews, monetizing your passion for archery and hunting in the outdoors, an archery tip as far as hunting goes, and an archery story in which she had an epic failure but learned a big lesson. Stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 2 of Archery Maniacs. Here we have a newfound friend of mine, Sarah Hamilton. Sarah, why don't you kind of tell everybody just a little bit about yourself?
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And so I started hunting when I was about 8 years old. I have 3 brothers, 1 sister, and then 13 cousins. So we're really the only girls out of that whole group. So I never really had a chance to learn anything besides that. So I started hunting when I was tiny. Then I got my first deer when I was 8 years old. We also do turkey and duck, rabbit, kind of everything there is. We're from a small town in Oklahoma, so really hunting isn't really a hobby. It's just kind of like what you do. We always eat all of our meat, and it kind of keeps us going throughout the year. So, you know, I've just done that my whole life. And then I've grown, obviously, once I got comfortable with a gun and I've shot X number of game with a gun, I was like, okay, well, let's move on to something else. So then my grandpa and my cousins really pushed bow hunting on me just to kind of keep up and continue my skills. So it didn't become like, okay, cool, we're going to go sit under this beater and shoot a deer and then it's on your wall. Like, we wanted it to be more about the sport. And so as we all aged, we got pushed within our limits as sportsmen to kind of keep going and keep challenging ourselves. And we just kept doing that. And then when I got into college, I studied biology. I wanted to do something with the outdoors, something nature-y. But then I realized I also wanted to go to med school. So once I was doing my biology, I was like, all right, we have to go a little deeper in depth. So I started doing microbiology, and that led me into studying, like, disease and pathogens and then into med school. But even, like, in the midst of all this, as I was continuing my education and following my path to be a doctor, I never lost my passion for hunting. And I guess that's when I realized, like, okay, this isn't just a hobby. Like, this is who I am. This is what I enjoy. It's what I'm about. So literally every time I wasn't in class, I would leave and head out to one of our places to do something hunting related, even if it was just like scouting or prepping. And I just started being really involved in that. And then once I realized, you know, I know how to do all this. I always wanted to be an independent hunter. I tagged along with my cousins and my grandpa, but they always taught me how to do everything. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to tag along and do everything and you just get to shoot a deer and take a picture. Like, absolutely not. I always had to carry in my own decoys. I was responsible for checking my feeder cams, making sure I had food out. In the summer, we clear the paths for brush, set up our stands, everything. I always had to know how to do it. And even as far as cleaning my own deer, my dad and my grandpa taught me a long time ago, like, hey, we're not always going to be here for you. So at some point, you need to learn, if you're by yourself, how to do this. So, of course, I did that. And then once I just realized, like, wow, I know how to do everything. This is what I'm good at. This is what I've become. Then I realized that, you know, that's kind of rare. Other girls aren't doing this. And if they are, it's like, okay, they're taking a picture in camo in a bikini. Like, no, this isn't an outdoor thing. So once I kind of realized, like, wow, this is what I am and a part of what I really like to do, then I started seeing the industry. Like, there's really not a spot for women in hunting. There's not only are there not women who are confident hunters and who are outdoorsmen, there's really not gear for women, none of that. So then I just kind of started teaming up with companies who I was already using their product and helping sort of be a voice for women in the outdoors, and then design products made that, you know, I could comfortably use in my hunts. And then just kind of started from there, and that's about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I really, truly appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show. Sarah, I was just kind of wondering if you'd kind of cover kind of just a little bit about your road to becoming part of Matthew's team and a shooter for them, because there's a lot of people out there that we get a lot of questions, you know, how do you become sponsored? How do you become pro staff, you know? And I see you, especially at a younger age, and you are. So if you'd kind of share that little bit of your story, that would be awesome.
Right. So as far as pro staff for Matthews or any other company, like I said, when we hunted growing up, it was never about the industry. Like, I never really, of course we watched hunting shows, but I never really understood that there was an industry behind hunting. It's like, these are the tools we use to get the job done. So it wasn't really until the last couple years where I became more aware of the industry and like the marketing side of it and being pro staff and all that. And the way that I sort of approached that was, you want to be a representative or a voice for a company that's essential to your hunt. So you don't want to represent somebody that you've never heard of, you've never used your products. So what I did, if there's something that I rely on, like if you're in my backpack or you're in my blind or in my gear and you're a part of my hunt, then that's who you kind of want to represent. And I never wanted to approach it as, hey, I want to advertise for you. It's like, hey, these are your products. I've learned to use them really, really well, and it's done amazing things for my hunt. So I want to show other people how they can use these things so they can have the same success and enjoy hunting just as much as I do. So once I did that, I just reached out to Matthews, and I was like, hey, you know, this is what I do. I've used your bows. Here are my pictures. What can I do to be a part of the company? What can I do to kind of network with others and teach other girls how to shoot a bow. And then at that point, then companies will kind of offer you, well, hey, this is what we've got. And sometimes it may be, hey, come to our trade show and just talk to people, be a face there. Or sometimes it may be like, hey, you hunt all the time. Let me give you a bow and just film, like nothing to it. Just shoot your deer and do what you like to do. And that's what I mainly do. You know, I'm really, you don't Google Matthews and see my face. nothing famous or anything special about it. It's just that I like to represent them because I rely so much on their product, so I include it in all of my hunts. And that's really it for Matthews. It's the same with call companies. You know, you'll find a call that you really like how this call is built, and then you call and you talk to the people that own it, and you find out what the company is about. Like, what are they based on? What are their morals? How do they deal with customers? What's their foundation? And once you kind of find companies who align with what you believe the outdoors should be about and what it is to be an outdoorsman, then you kind of just become part of their family. And eventually, you know, you have your bow company, your call company, your camo, your waders, and you're a voice for all of those. But then you realize that this huge thing that you thought was like an industry is really just like a network of people who are now your hunting buddies. And you just kind of become a part of like a really tight-knit group within the hunting industry. And to me, that's the most appealing part about it.
Absolutely. So curious, have you ever applied for a pro staff and been told no?
I have not, honestly. I have not. But that being said, I really haven't applied for many pro staff positions. With gator waders is a main thing. Like, so I had worn gator waders because I Googled it one day and there was a girl's waiter as an option. Before that, you know, you just kind of tag along and like whatever old camo your dad has, that's what you wear. You have like 10 layers and you can hardly walk and you're the one always tripping. And that was me for a long time. But I didn't think anything of it because that's just how it is. So I came across last year that there were girls waiters you could buy that would fit and you could move really well. So I got involved with them, and of course I would just have my photos of the hunts with my waiters, and they reached out and wanted me to be a part of their pro staff. But my job for them has really been great because you can see like where's the need. Like, so I'm a girl duck hunter and I'm out here hunting every time, but I still don't have this component to my wader, or I still wish it fit me in this other way. So I started teaming up with them sort of as a consultant, like representing female waterfowl hunters. How would I like to see the waiter change or evolve? And through that process, I got to know what they were about as a company and who they were as people. And then it just kind of all came to fit together. But that's the main thing. You just sort of, you don't really reach out and apply for pro staff. It's really like you use a product that you love. And if you're involved with that product, things just sort of fall into place, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as you know from some of your friends, I think there will be plenty of times that when you do reach out, you might get told no. And you know, you don't want to really take it so personally.
Yeah, and that's true. Yeah, that we have people that apply through Gator. And, you know, a lot of people apply to be a pro staff just to either get free product or to have the title. And we have to tell a lot of people no because there's only a certain amount that we can afford to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to get told no a lot of times, but I think the best thing to do in that situation is just sort of step back and see, like, what are your goals? If your goals, like, you really want to be a pro staff and you really want to hunt, well, then just spend a ton of time hunting and getting film. And overall, the goal for every company with pro staff is normally marketing. So you sort of have to address, like, where am I at in my marketing? Like, how many followers do I have? What kind of network have I built around myself that I can share this product with people? And I think you just sort of reevaluate where you are and then make, like, a great plan for next year and keep talking to the company, like, build a relationship with them. They should, when you call, they're like, oh, my God, Sarah's calling again? Here we go. Like, they need to know who you are. And I think if you just keep trying and keep improving wherever you're lacking, that it'll all work out eventually.
Absolutely. And I think that's an awesome point you just made. I think that is exactly what they are using for their marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're the type of person that goes on there and you apply for a pro staff or whatever, and you're spending more time sitting on the couch than you are using their stuff, most likely
right.
You're probably not going to get it.
No, right. And you have to, you have to be using their product, like really use it. I see a lot of girls that are just taking selfies all the time. And I'm thinking, listen, like this company doesn't want a picture of your selfie in this. Like get out there and use your bow. And hey, maybe your makeup's not going to look good and your hair is going to look horrible. Like if you look on my Instagram, there's a picture just from the other day of one of my bow deer. Probably hadn't showered or brushed my hair in like 2 days because we were at deer camp. But it's okay. Like, that's what this is about. It's not about, like, looking pretty and setting up this great picture. But companies want to see, like, the real you, like, you out there using the stuff. And I think once you do that, then your chances increase tremendously.
For sure. For sure. Awesome, awesome tips. You know, you pretty well covered kind of monetizing your passion. Right. So we won't really go too much into that because we've already kind of talked about it. So let's kind of get a little more geared towards archery.
Right.
You know, you said that you've been shooting since 8, and that's awesome. You know, are you primarily hunting, you know, from tree stands or ground blinds, or how are you mostly hunting, Sarah?
So it depends. I hunt all over the state. Of Oklahoma is like my main point where I've always hunted, the same land I've been on since I was a little kid. My family's blessed enough to have land in eastern and western Oklahoma, so we have a lot of options. We hunt both places, and they're very, very different. You know, eastern Oklahoma is tall trees, some pines, really thick timber up in the mountains. It looks like Arkansas, kind of. But then western Oklahoma is almost like a desert. Like, you're literally out there with no trees. You'll have some cedars, a little sagebrush. So it depends on where you are. In eastern Oklahoma, yes, I'm going to be in a tree stand or a ground blind. The last few years, it really hasn't got that cold, so we haven't had all of our foliage drop off. So it's been a little bit difficult for me to get good shots out of tree stands. So I've preferred to be in ground blinds. That's in eastern Oklahoma. And then on western Oklahoma, you'll have ground blind on a hill. You might have a tower stand just about 20 yards from your feeder. That's kind of just a freestanding stand because there really aren't trees. So really all of it just depends on where we're hunting, what the deer, where they're moving, what the foliage is like, what the crops are like. Mix of everything, really.
Cool. Cool. Well, you know, it's awesome that you mentioned ground blinds because it seems like people struggle with ground blind hunting. Especially, you know, whitetails. Whitetails, not only do they smell, but they see and hear so well.
They do.
Do you have maybe a few tips for ground blind hunting that you would like to share?
Yeah, so what I do with my ground blinds is I put them out all year round. I know a lot of people don't like to do that because it can wear them down and, you know, your blind may not last as long. But to me, as close as you have to get to the deer, I feel like you don't want any surprises. So if your blind is there where all year round, it might be windy and your blind might shake a little bit or all of those things that will disturb your deer. Like, you know what's going to happen. If you move your foot, it's going to make a noise and he's gone. Like, here we go. But if you keep it like that all year round, I think the deer sort of get used to it. So then little subtle movements don't become such an alarming thing because they're used to that being there. I'll leave some of my windows on it unzipped. That way, when it's windy, they're used to it flapping and making a little bit of noise, and we're all good to go when season comes. As far as smell, I just try to put a lot of cedar on the outside of it. I mean, obviously it depends where I'm sort of brushing it in, but I'll try to put a lot of cedar or natural things and then spray myself with a scent repellent. I have the scent lock one in my bag now, but just spray as good as you can and try to eliminate any scents. Obviously, you maybe want to have a couple ground blinds. I normally have a couple, and position yourself where the wind is going to be in your favor for each hunt. If you only have one blind, you really restrict yourself a lot and kind of put it in a riskier situation. But if you have a couple set up, then you get yourself a lot better options.
Cool. Yeah. Now, when you're brushing your blind in, is there a point where you kind of can put too much brush around or on top or whatever, you know, on a ground blind?
Yeah, definitely. Like, so obviously you want to make it just mimic the natural environment as much as possible. So if you're, for example, in western Oklahoma and you're in a field and you just brush your blind with cedar or any kind of heavy, like, you're going to stand out like a sore thumb. Like, someone's going to come by you. So sometimes if you're at a place where it's so open that you can't brush in a blind, We will just put a little bit of grass or try to paint the blind a color that resembles the grass around it, and yeah, not brush it in too much. Just try to make it blend as best as possible.
Cool. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, so now when you're in a blind, because in Wyoming I don't do much blind hunting. I usually
right.
do spot and stalk. So,
right.
You know, when you're in a blind, most of the time you shoot from sitting down, correct?
I don't because I'm short. So I'm 5'3".
Okay.
I have the luxury of being able to stand up when I shoot. For me, being small, it's kind of hard to draw my, if you're using a compound sport, it's not a crossbow, it's kind of difficult for me to draw my bow back and be able to have freedom of angles, right? Because you want to be able to see, you don't know where he's going to come from. He could come from the left, the right, behind you. So for me, with confidence and comfort, I like to stand up and draw and shoot from out of that. But there has been times, you know, if I have somebody filming or I have a friend with me or somebody helping me scout, I do have to sit on a stool, and I'll just get one of those stools, almost like an office one that you can just sit and spin in a circle on, and try to give myself the best range of motion through that.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So for people that are just a little bit taller and they will be sitting, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I don't shoot very often sitting down.
Right.
Is that something that if you know you're going to be ground blind hunting, you think that'd probably be something smart to practice before going,
yeah.
you think?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, my theory for all of this, practice like you're going to do it. So if you're squatting at a weird angle, you better be practicing just like that.
Cool. Yeah, because as you know, as soon as you start adding different torque to the bow, you're probably not going to hit where you want it to.
Your angles, you know, you need to be sighted in exactly the angle as close as you can to what you're going to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, with talking about all this hunting, Sarah, do you have an archery story where you're hunting deer that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, so... We'll just take it last season, very, very close. So obviously, you know, it's really fun to prep and to hunt and to go out there and expect this really awesome deer that you've been seeing on your camera. But sometimes it doesn't work out like that. So last year, we scouted. I had cameras up all over the place. So in eastern Oklahoma, we'll hunt the bottom and the top of the mountain. So the deer just kind of move differently throughout the year. You know, if you're starting early in archery, where they still have some foliage and some things to eat, they're going to stay up in the timber. But then more towards winter, they're going to come down and use your feed plots or your corn a little more. So I had this nice deer, like, nice buck. So we had him. I had him, and I knew where he was. Like, we knew these travel patterns, and everything was great. So I get there, opening day of bow season, and I see him come. But he was a little far away. He's probably 120. So I was like, okay, let's be smart. Let's absolutely do not shoot this. So we waited, and you know what? He never came again. I hunted all the way until the very last day, it would have been around January 31st or something, of bow season, every single day out there in that stand waiting for him to come. And I had two nice little 12 points that strolled through, even some smaller bucks that came, and I thought, God, I should shoot them. But something in my head was like, no, don't, because he would come, but he would come every day right around dark. So when it's a little too dark to shoot, and of course you could risk it and shoot, but I'm not comfortable with that, and I don't really think it's ethical. Like, I don't want to shoot a deer, and then I don't know where he ran off. I don't know if he wounded somewhere. Like, that's not me. So, of course, I waited and got nothing. Never. One day right before dark, I saw him come in, and I could have shot, but I just didn't feel safe doing it, and I never shot him, and he's still there right now. And you think, you know, that story sucks. Like, you didn't get a deer. Wow. But it really doesn't, because it just kind of tells you that as a bow hunter, the most important thing is to be really patient. Like, maybe he's not going to be there. So we're looking at our cameras now, and this guy has blossomed, like, even more than ever. Like, it sucks that I didn't get him last year, but now I have the chance to hunt him again this year, maybe study his patterns a little different, set myself up where he'll be crossing a little more during the day. And to me, that's super exciting. Like, I've been watching this guy for over a year now, and I've set myself up where he's even better than last year. And so I think bow hunting in general is like that. Like, you just have to be very, very, very patient with it. And it's not going to be immediate gratification. You're going to have a lot of failures. You're going to have a lot of crap. I've been out for 3 months, and I don't have a deer. Like, that's no fun. But then something good, like you're going to learn from it. You're going to be a better hunter. So for me, that's, I'm really excited for this year because it's that loss, really.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when you finally decide that, yeah, bow hunting is what I'm going to do, you better be prepared that you're going to have times when you don't fill your tag.
Right.
And you're right. It might suck, but that's part of it. And if you're up for the challenge and you're up for realizing that, then it won't be near as bad.
Right.
You know, when you hunt, Sarah, for your deer, are you hunting? I mean, are you kind of a trophy hunter? Or are you hunting more for meat, or do you do both, or, you know, different occasions?
Right, so we do both. We have some rules. Like, we have a lot of family. We all kind of hunt together. And so from a young age, like, our dads and our granddaddies, we have rules. So you can shoot a doe if it's doe season. So we all, take that back, we all eat deer meat, elk meat. We eat game all year round. You know, we have gardens, we fish. That's our main source of meat for everybody in our family. So we will shoot doe if needed for doe control population, but we do trophy hunt, as in we hunt large mature bucks. And of course it's great to get a nice rack on the wall and a mount, but more than anything, we like to preserve our land so that we can continue hunting and they can continue breeding in our area. So we will hunt bucks. We always all want a nice buck, but we're not allowed to shoot it unless they're under 4 years old. So we'll have nice deer come through that, yeah, that's a great deer, but he's still a little young, so we have to pass them up, obviously, and just keep waiting for a mature one. Now, we will, if we see a deer come through that has genetics that are not good, you know, if his antlers are messed up, we'll go ahead and harvest that one just to keep the genetic population good and strong so that then later you can develop more nice trophy-style mature bucks and get those a few years later. But, yeah, we're really, really selective in what we shoot, and not just for trophy, but to preserve the genetics of the population of our deer there at our land.
That's awesome, and I would assume that you meant over 4 years old.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's
No, that's completely fine, because then you cleared it up right after. I just wanted to make sure, because sometimes, you know how people are, when they listen, they like to pick on things.
For sure. So, oh, God, you'll have 10 haters on that. Yeah.
hey, you know, that's something that comes with the territory. And we'll come back to this type of subject in just a second, because I want to say a little bit more about you guys hunting mature deer. Because there's a lot of people out there that pick on hunters, saying, oh, well, you're only out for the trophy.
Right.
Well, there's a lot more that goes into it than just having big antlers, you know.
Right.
Like you say, the maturity of the animal is a huge bonus. But also, 9 times out of 10, those older, bigger deer are a lot more of a challenge to hunt and to harvest than it is to walk out in the field and shoot a fork horn.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, so that's something that like, here when we hunt high country mule deer, mm-hmm. people are like, why? Well, you're just in it for the antlers. I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand that when I'm in it for antlers the size that I'm in it, that deer is 9 times out of 10, 5, 6 years old.
Right.
You know, and they don't, and they're like, well, so why did you just shoot a doe? And I'm like, because I could shoot a doe any day of the week.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know,
right.
I like the challenge.
Exactly.
But yes, so we'll now switch back over to the haters. That is something that I would like to touch on, because, you know, I don't really feel that social media is a big part of branding yourself and getting companies to know you. But companies can get to know you if you're just calling them on the phone and you're meeting them in person as well at shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what you've got to be ready for, and Sarah, if you would love to expand on this when I get done, what you've got to be ready for is, as soon as you start posting pictures of you killing things, people are going to be negative.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you do, there's going to be someone that is going to be negative. And if you'd love to share, Sarah, how do you handle some of those negative people?
Yeah, so you kind of get, there's sort of two avenues within that I get and that sort of gets to me at times. So first, you have your anti-hunters. So I had an experience as a medical student. I'm around a lot of people. I'm around the doctors a lot, and I'm sort of a face for our program, right? So I had a physician that oversaw me in my school get really upset because I started posting my hunting pictures. And they're like, you know, I just want you to know it's nothing against you, but I can't associate with you anymore. We can't be friends. We can't do this because I'm against what you're doing. Like, I think I'm against hunting. I think it's a trophy thing. And so for them, I tried to say, okay, listen, this is what I've done my whole life. And I don't think I told you, but also I'm Native American. So my family is Native. I've grown up learning everything about hunting as far to the detail as my granddaddy taught us to even make our own arrows, like out of flint in a deer antler. Like, we can make our own arrows, everything. We utilize every part of the deer. This is what we do for our food. And you can explain that to people who are until you're blue in the face. But if they're anti-hunting, they're anti-hunting, and they're going to stay that way. So for those people, I try to just say, you know, this is what I believe, and educate them a little bit as to why I do it so they don't think you're just trophy hunting. But aside from that, you just have to let it go, and you have to realize those people are out there. But more importantly, those people are voters. So for your vote, for whoever you're picking and you're backing that will support your rights for a gun, you have two of those who are totally against it, and they're afraid of it. So, you know, it just motivates me to kind of educate people why I do it, what I'm about, but also to be more involved in my local politics and making sure that I'm backing and I'm a voice for politicians and leaders who believe the same things I do so I can continue hunting and having these luxuries. So that's that avenue. But then the other are obviously, like, you get picked on just because you're a girl and you hunt. And so then there's that whole misconception that you're a huntress or you're just in it for this or that. And it's true. And I see that happen all the time in girls. And so I can see how people approach you easily because it's so common. And for them, I say, listen, like, I get what you're saying, but give me a duck call and come call with me and see how that works out for you. Because I can prove to you and I can show you that I do this my whole life, and I know how to do all of it. I'm not here for a picture or for anything. I'm here because of this, what I love to do. So you can convince them or not, and that's what it is. But then you do have a lot of girls that I see, it's frustrating now, that will just take, they're holding a gun in a camo bikini. And so because there's so many of those, and there aren't a ton of female outdoorsmen, as I like to say, that are really getting the job done, people just have that conception that that's what we're all like. And so for the girls that are like that, you know, I always just, I get frustrated and I have to bite my tongue. Sometimes I don't bite it enough, but I have to think that, hey, at the end of the day, at least they're bringing attention to our sport. You know, at least people are paying attention to hunting, giving it a little mind. At least they're bringing attention, but definitely try to steer them in the direction of the ones that are actually doing it as a lifestyle.
Exactly. You know, And I agree, you know, no matter what you do or how tough you are, people's comments are some of them will shake you to the core, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the prime examples that I remember is Cameron Haynes, who is an extremely hardcore do-it-yourself backcountry bow hunter.
Right.
And he posted a picture of a bear that either he shot or a bear that Joe Rogan shot, which is awesome. I am a complete advocate of all of any type
right.
of hunting.
Right.
But people were commenting on there that they were going to come kill his daughter because of that. And I just was like, you know, how low do people think because they're not willing to even try to understand what it is that we're doing?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just the lack of understanding. Yeah, people will say things, and like that lady, that was a great connection I had in my industry. She was one of my mentors who I needed to shadow every week, and it happens, and there's nothing you can do besides educate the best you can. That's it.
Yep, and it's funny because, you know, they talk, and I've started doing the exact same thing, is when somebody wants to comment or say something like that, there's a few things. You delete the comment, you block the person, and then you forget
right.
about it.
Right.
And if you don't forget about it, until you forget about it, you will continue arguing with that person inside your house. It'll literally destroy you. It deteriorates you from the inside out.
Yeah, and I've seen that. I've seen it, you know, on people's Instagrams and Facebooks where there's 10 pages long of comment of going back and forth and back and forth. And I'm like, listen, this isn't worth my time. Like, thank you for your day. Thank you for giving acknowledgement to what I do. And that's where we're going to end it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so long story short, with your comments, when people are negative, just be the bigger person and remove it before it gets bigger than it ever needs to be, because it's not worth it.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, perfect, Sarah. That's pretty well it, unless you have any kind of tip or anything else you would like to share with the audience.
Tip, man, just be patient. It's always patient, whether it's with a call company, with somebody you're trying to get promoed with, whether it's your hunt, you always just have to, like, wait it out. My little motto is ABC, like, always be cool. Like, play possum, think it out, and just calm down, and then your hunt or whatever always works out in your favor.
That's awesome. That's right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to Archery Maniacs. You heard it from Sarah. Always be cool.
Thank you for tuning in to the Archery Maniacs show. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. I would really appreciate it. Hopefully, you learned something that will help you be better tomorrow than you were today. Some other podcasts that you should definitely tune into are Get Bit Outdoors, Sharp Sticks, Gritty Bowman, Knock On Podcast, J. Scott Outdoors, Full Draw, Full Time, Wired to Hunt, Meat Eater, The Hunt Backcountry Podcast, Keep Hammering, and The Joe Rogan Experience. Now a brief break to hear from our sponsors. My Trophy Vinyl. Go to them for all of your design, vinyl, and logo needs. Do you have a great memory you want turned into an awesome vinyl? My Trophy Vinyl has you covered, and for an extremely great price. Head on over to www.mytrophyvinyl.com or call Steve at 207-808-0409. That is 207-808-0409 to order today. Bring your memories to life with a vinyl that lasts. Once again, that is www.mytrophyvinyl.com or call 207-808-0409. Sand Springs Archery of Craig, Colorado. Ready for a new bow? Or maybe tune the one you have and get some new arrows? Stop by Sand Springs Archery and Alan will take great care of you. Give him a call today at 970-756-9315. That is 970-756-9315 for all of your archery needs. Once again, that number is 970-756-9315. Thank you to our sponsors for all the support. Now, let's get back to the show. Once again, thanks so much for your time. Be looking for a new episode next week, because every Monday, we, Archery Maniacs, are going to be coming out with a brand new podcast. As always, shoot straight, keep ripping, and remember, live life at full draw.